Woohoo! Next Wednesday is the big day, the Entrepreneur's Guide to Keeping Your Shit Together. How to Run Your Business Without Letting It Run You is coming out on the 21st, next Wednesday. So Zen Founder listeners, please, please, if you go and buy the book, it would be fantastic if you would leave a review on Amazon. We are wanting to put this book in as many hands as possible because we are really hopeful that it's helpful. We've put together some of our kind of most helpful tips and tried and true strategies to mitigate some of the emotional challenge that goes along with being a founder. And we've tried to package that all in a book that's easy to read and easy to use. Today's episode is an interview that I did a while back with Zach Holman. He is a solo founder and previously worked at GitHub, so he has had quite a life in the tech world. Last October, he wrote a blog on his website, zachholman.com, called The Depression Thing. And I came across it and found it to be one of the better descriptions of the depression experience that I have read online. And I was really glad that he took the time to talk to me about it. And stories like Zach's are the why behind why we do what we do at Zen Founder. We want to normalize conversations about mental illness. We want to let founders know that it is totally normal to struggle. That's typical. And that there are lots of things that can be done to help. So the podcast, the book, my consulting work, all of that is designed to let founders know that there are resources and support available for the emotional and mental ups and downs that inherently go along with the challenge of starting and running a business. I hope Zach's story gives you an opportunity for commiseration, but also some ideas about how you can keep your own mental game strong. If you like what we're doing or you have suggestions for episodes or topics you'd like us to tackle, then feel free to be in touch. You can reach out to me, sherry@zenfounder.com. That's Sherry like the wine, S-H-E-R-R-Y. Thanks so much for listening.
We plan to talk through the issues faced by startup founders and the people close to them.
That overused phrase, work-life balance.
It is an amazingly focusing time.
This is what we do, you know, aside from our families, this is our whole work life.
I'm also known as Dr. Wine.
You know, this is a little bit non-traditional.
A little more zen in the startup life.
Zen founder.
Those days were a mental struggle.
I have been stressed in the past, and I know that I will be in the future.
A founder and his or her significant other would both get value from the episode.
Well, thanks, Zach, for taking the time to talk with me today. I came across your recent post about depression, I think, while I was in vacation in Mexico. And it was just like one of those things that I stopped what I was doing and read it and read it again and read it really carefully, because it was such a great description of the play-by-play of how you, A, had to figure out what was happening to you and gave it a label and then sort of tried to figure out what to do about it. So I think that kind of candor is pretty rare in the tech world. And I really appreciate you being willing to put it out there, because we know that a lot of people who are entrepreneurs or who are people in the tech world are experiencing it, but not a lot of folk are talking about it.
Yeah. Thanks. And thanks for having me on. I'm pretty excited to talk about this, ironically enough, I guess, if you can be excited about talking about depression.
I think you can, because it's important, you know, it's meaningful. It's a good, meaningful conversation.
Yeah.
So let's maybe just cut right to it. What was the moment that you realized, I am not okay?
I mean, I kind of mentioned this in the post, but there was the moment where after drinking with a good friend, I broke a glass or a wine glass or something like that. And that was weird for me, because I'm never I don't act that way when I'm drunk, ever. And I knew that I had been dealing with a lot of, feelings and things that I think I would have agreed that I would have been depressed for, a year or two before that. But that was kind of the, the tipping point where I was like, oh man, this is not me. This is not where I want to be. And that was just a very strange realization for me, because, you know, before it was always just kind of like, oh yeah, you know, I'm depressed and, you know, that's how things go and, you know, I can deal with it because that's how I deal with it and stuff. But once I sort of realized like, oh, this is different, that was kind of a jolt. And I was like, okay, it kind of gave me like a bit of a kick in the butt to make some changes, I guess.
Mm-hmm. It was just so atypical for you that you didn't really recognize it.
Yeah. And it's like, once you sort of start recognizing a couple of those things, you kind of go back and say, oh, you know, this thing is different. Like, this is different. Like, this is not, you know, you sort of start recognizing signs that you normally would have just kind of bypassed and not really thought much about. So,
like, what did depression feel like for you? Like, how would you describe it?
Mine was just like, almost like a being smothered by like a really just lack of movement, I guess, like lack of motivation, lack of really wanting to do anything, you know, kind of the stereotypical, I don't want to get off the couch because the couch is nice and easy. And that was also kind of a weird thing. Once I started recognizing these signs in me, I was like, oh, I really don't want to do anything. Like, even my desk over there is dirty. Like, I don't even want to clean it. And that'll take 30 seconds. Like, it's just kind of like, eh, you know, everything's too hard and pointless. And that was like my, you know, experience with depression.
And that was happening as you're starting a company. So you're almost a year into your most recent venture during. And how did that, like, how did the timing line up with you beginning this venture and you getting really depressed?
It was, I mean, it's kind of a couple different things. Like, one, I think, you know, in hindsight, my depression has really been with me for 10, 15 years, at least in some variety. So, like, part of it wasn't really new. Kind of the extreme part that I've been experiencing the last, like, year or two in particular was a little bit more new. But I think, like, there's a number of things that sort of hit me all at the same time. Like, once I sort of started recognizing that, oh, I am depressed. And at the time, it was kind of before I had really started, you know, moving towards, you know, founding a company type of deal. I was still sort of searching. And I think that's part of the problem that I was experiencing because I didn't have, you know, a huge focus. And I think that exacerbated the cycle. And I was like, oh, what am I going to focus on? What am I doing? What am I, you know, trying to do with my life? And once I sort of started seeking help for my depression, it became a lot easier for me to sort of start focusing on like, oh, kind of want to work on this idea that I have for this company. And as I got better, I got to do more work on, you know, the company. And it was kind of a reverse cycle, if you will, like where, you know, I got more motivation as I got healthier and stuff like that. So I think there's a definitely a closer relationship between, at least for me, depression and being in a role of founder and stuff like that, which is kind of interesting. I'm still trying to kind of unpack that a little bit too.
Yeah, I think it's a relationship that exists. The exact nature of it, we're not sure about, but I was actually talking to Rand Fishkin yesterday about his experience founding Moz and the extent to which, in some, at least for him, like the depression kind of went hand in hand with some of the kind of cycles in the life of an entrepreneur.
Yeah, I mean, it's a cliche for a good reason, like high highs, low lows. And yeah, you know, it's easy to forget, like, especially the beginning, a lot of the lows are really crappy starting out. Yeah, it's a weird circumstance, regardless of if you face like a traditional, you know, diagnosis of depression or anything. Like, it's just a hard thing to do for anybody.
And I think there are, you know, we know that there are like different causes of depression. Some people have a very like biochemical depression and it's cyclical and it sort of happens in a predictable way. Other people have kind of an existential angst or depression that might be at least triggered by things in the environment. And it sounds a little bit like that's some of what happened for you in the sense that your listlessness after leaving GitHub and leaving the other things that you've done and the sort of what's next question was a pretty painful one for you, a pretty hard one.
Yeah, I think it's definitely like, at least for me, like kind of both sides of those two, because as I've sort of been on the other side of things now, kind of recognizing that I think there was probably some sort of chemical reaction in my brain where I'm just like, I felt lower than I should have been. And, you know, medication can help with that. Therapy, kind of analyzing how I view different things happen in my life, like all of that can kind of raise my baseline, which is quite a bit better. But on top of that, I mean, there's always, you know, lots of big things that can trigger things as well. Like, I mean, all of this sort of, or a lot of this started with when I left GitHub. I got fired from GitHub. So they're sort of coming to terms with that over the next couple of years. And sort of, I heard one guy call it being in the wilderness for a while, trying to sort out, like, you know, what do I want to do and all that sort of stuff. Like, it's kind of a precarious position to be in, because you can kind of go either way where you can say, oh yeah, everything is great and I'm going to attack the world. And for me, it was like, you know, a couple of weeks of that, and then it just sort of slid into, well, whatever, you know, well, you know, what's the point and stuff like that. So yeah, it's hard. And I think, like, you know, I've been talking to a lot of people about all of these sorts of things all over the spectrum. And really, I think the answer is just, well, it depends. Like, it depends on your own circumstances and how your brain works and, you know, what experiences you're facing every day. And it just depends, even on a person-by-person basis, of how they react to things differently. And that can change over time. And, you know, it's some complicated stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, you know, I wish in some ways it was more like diabetes. We could just, like, give you a blood test and it'd be like, yes, you have diabetes. No, you don't. Or maybe, like, you're pre-diabetic. You're, like, in the danger zone. And it just doesn't work like that with mental illness in the same way. And depression is very nuanced and it takes different shapes in different people for different reasons. And that's, I think, one of the hardest things about really helping founders really identify what depression is and when they're experiencing it. Because, you know, like you experienced, there can be this sort of slow slide. You don't know that you're not well until some really outlandish outlier kind of thing happens. Mm-hmm. Or you just, you know, you get fired or you get, you know, something, some external force tells you, like, no, you're not okay.
Yeah. And I always find it, like, fascinating, because the whole time, like, I was in this sort of slide, you know, I had a number of my own friends who were going through similar things, some worse, some not as bad. And it was very easy for me to say, oh, I think you're dealing with some hard stuff. Like, you should, you know, seek help or do all this sort of stuff. And, you know, it's very hard to turn the lens on yourself sometimes and recognize that, like, what you're telling them is, you know, even better advice for yourself. Like, get some help or something like that. So, you know, but, like, a lot of when I look back, it's just like your brain is, like, different. And it's like, I don't know if it's like defenses or something, but you don't recognize your own signs in yourself. You don't recognize, you know, the logical thing to do. And I kind of look back, like, you know, I kept a lot of just journal for myself every, like, couple of days or something like that. And reading through those journals, like, it just, dude's a stranger. Like, I don't know who this person is, because they're just in a very different mindset. They're not seeing kind of things logically and stuff. And, you know, that's kind of the hardest point of view, because, you know, it's not as easy as just sort of, you know, snap out of it. Like, you know, just go do this sort of solution or something. It's like, you're kind of fighting against yourself the whole time, which is the really tricky part to, you know, kind of tackle that from within.
And I think, you know, especially for entrepreneurs, there's this sort of adherence to logic that is helpful when you're founding a business. But what depression does is change the rules of logic, so that it all feels logical in your head, but it's just, like, the wrong logic. Like, the logic in your head is like, surely I will always be a failure, or surely, like, my life is always going to suck. And that all makes sense in depression land, but it's just different logic than you would employ when you're well, or that makes sense to you in other times.
Yeah, I definitely would say that a lot. Just like, well, what's the point? It's just going to be bad anyway, or something like that, which, like, on its face is a really dumb assertion, but, like, you know, I could totally justify it in my own head. And it's just like, and that's kind of why, you know, I'm a big, at least now, I'm a big proponent of getting some sort of external help, whatever that, whether that's therapy or medication or whatever the case is, because, like, you can't diagnose a problem if your tools themselves are broken, you know? And I think that's sort of what I felt like was the major problem. It's just like, you know, I'm trying to come up with a stupid metaphor of, like, you know, how do you fix a car engine if, you know, your tool is...
You're stuck in the trunk. Like, I mean...
Yeah, like, how do you even do that, you know? And, you know, as long... If you can get out of the trunk and, you know, do it... This metaphor is getting really weird, but, like... But, like, you know what I'm saying? It's like, it's if you can do that, like, more power to you, but I don't think it's, like, a shame on you if you can't magically fix your own tools and brain to get yourself out of the solution, a situation.
So what was therapy like for you? I mean, it sounds like you, at least from what you wrote in your post, you went in a little bit cynical, like, this is for other people, but
yeah,
somehow you got yourself in the room. And how did it go?
Yeah, it was weird. It was like, that was definitely something that I had told half dozen people or like my friends, like, you should see somebody. And like, I never did. And, you know, I had lots of excuses because the last 4 years I tried, I think this was the fourth try or something. The first try or something is just, it's hard enough to try and find a therapist because, you know, it's not like a restaurant. There's no Yelp reviews. Like, there are some reviews, but they're wholly unhelpful, you know? And again, like, everybody's different. So how do you even find the right person and stuff? And, you know, I tried a couple of different things and found some people, but then, you know, there'd be insurance problems and I'd never actually see somebody. Or, you know, one person was just like, I don't do anything over the internet. You know, you're going to have to call me in for appointments and stuff like that. I was like, all right, click. Like, you know, that's ridiculous. But so there's like, these are all like minor things, but like they were far enough for me to just be like, all right, throw my hands up and be, I'm not going to do this or something. But
it's enough of a barrier that when you already don't feel good and you're not motivated, then it just made it that much harder.
Yeah. And it's even harder because when you're talking about like therapy in particular, like, you know, what do you want to say? Like 1 to 3 or 4 sessions before you can start even making an assessment of like, is this going to be helpful for you? And when you're feeling this way, like the last thing you want somebody to say is, yeah, you're going to have like up to a month or more before you even can start recognizing if this makes any changes for you or if you have to start again with somebody else and start over. So there's a lot of like, you know, kind of fear surrounding that I had that was weirding me out. And like for the longest time when I was trying to come up with like, oh, who would be a good therapist for me? I always sort of thought like, oh, it has to be somebody like I have to be close with or something, or like, you know, a good BFF and, you know, I can just, you know, shoot the shit or something like that. But after I got into it, you know, I just kind of realized like, I don't have to be friends with this person. Like, as long as I'm open with them and like can talk about things, at least for me, that was kind of a big breakthrough where I was just kind of like, oh, I'm not looking for friendship with this person. I'm looking to fix myself. And that kind of opened a lot of things up in my head. That was about like a month or so in.
And that's like therapy. Some of how it's set up, right? Is that you really can't be friends with them. Like, yeah. I don't go to drinks and dinner with my clients because they need to have a space that's not reciprocal, or they don't have to, you don't have to hold up the other side of friendship with a therapist.
Yeah. Which I don't think I got before I went to one. Cause I kind of assumed, I don't know, from bad TV or something like that. Like there's a lot of back and forth or something, but it's like, I don't know. It's at least with my therapist, we had a good relationship of like, he was like a very receptive mirror or something like that with like, or he would be like the person holding up the mirror from the right angle to like get me to sort of see myself, which at least for me, that worked really well. I know there's a lot of different approaches to therapy and stuff like that, but yeah, like it was the whole therapy thing was weird for me for a good month or two. But then, you know, it just started, you know, it got to the point, I think it was like the 6th session or something. Like I walked out and I just remember being flabbergasted. I was like, huh, I kind of feel better. Like that was just a weird thing. It was like the first time. And I was like, oh, all right. I guess this is cool for me to keep doing.
So this is a thing. It works.
Yeah. Cause the whole time it was, again, like I did not really expect any therapy session to like make me feel better. I was like, oh, maybe it's a long-term thing or something. But like, yeah, I started almost like, you know, gasp, like looking forward to, you know, therapy and stuff. So.
And I think that's important to talk about because, again, you know, not to keep harping on that, especially in the entrepreneurs, but I think, you know, you're a results-oriented person, and anyone who is working in technology or is running a tech business or a web-based business, like you're used to seeing outcomes and tracking metrics and like are data-driven in a way that data is directly observable. And I think that therapy is a much more process-oriented, like it just takes a while and you don't always see the direct effects, but you kind of have to trust the process. And that feels a little like warm, fuzzy, like not sciencey enough, I think, for most entrepreneurs and tech folks. And I get that. I mean, I'm a science-oriented person myself, but it's a little more nuanced. It's a little more artful than we'd like it to be.
And I think even on top of that, like I kind of come from, I think a lot of programmers are this way where we kind of are like, oh, I have to go to a meeting today and like talk to people and like, whatever, just send me an email and like, we'll be done in like 3 minutes or something. And yeah, that's, it's when you're kind of coming from that perspective, it's just kind of like, oh, this is just another meeting with somebody I don't really want to talk to about things I really don't want to talk about. Like,
another human.
Not going to help. Yeah. Like, I spent my whole life trying to like get humans out of my life. And now I'm like paying a lot of money to get somebody like into my life. Like, it's weird, but it is like, it's a substantially different thing than just building a line of code or something like that.
And it sounds like, you know, despite your reticence, it's something that has been helpful.
Yeah, I think, like, you know, again, this is all very much, you know, person dependent and stuff, but I think therapy was pretty helpful for me. But I think, like, you know, what he did was like got me, like introduced me to a psychiatrist and I got on medication. And I think the combination of the two was really effective for me. Because I've talked to a lot of people since then who are kind of say the same thing. And they're like, okay, you know, I've tried therapy. It didn't really work for me or something like that. And it's like, cool, you know, it didn't like magically flip a switch for me either. But I think in combination of a lot of things, in combination with really changing how you sort of attack a problem, there's a lot of different things. And like, there's obviously, you know, diet and, you know, life changes and stuff you can take. So it's really, you know, about finding the right combination. And for me, like, honestly, it all started with therapy. So that's kind of like the foundation of all of these other changes I made.
And sometimes a good therapist can sort of serve as like a traffic conductor, like, yeah, go here to see this dietitian, talk to the psychiatrist, let's adjust your sleep schedule, like sort of trying things on multiple fronts at one time is generally the best practice with depression.
Yeah. And it's super helpful because, again, like, my brain was not set up to even pursue these solutions myself, much less, like, I had no idea. It's hard to even get to a solution when you don't know the questions to ask. And, you know, going to somebody else who maybe he's not a specialist in whatever it is, but he'll have a good way of saying, oh, yeah, talk to this person or try this or read up on this. You know, if you're not a specialist in all this, it's really helpful to have somebody who at least can point you in the right direction.
Yeah. You know, like, I don't cut my own hair or clean my own teeth. Like, there are specialists that we go to all the time for different parts of our body and functioning to sort of make sure that all the systems are working together. And I think a therapist can be just part of that team.
Yeah, I like that metaphor, especially as my dad was a dentist and my grandfather was a dentist. So shout out to the dentistry population.
Therapists are like the dentists of your mind.
We're not doing good on metaphors.
I know, so it was terrible. You want to talk a little bit about like the really low points for you? I mean, you mentioned in your post some moments of feeling suicidal or feeling like it was really too much to keep going. And although those are pretty like scary things to talk about, I think they're surprisingly common that people have thoughts and feelings like that. How did that manifest for you? What were the thoughts and feelings that you struggled with?
You know, it's kind of weird. Like, thinking back, I don't know if I really had many low points. Like, the whole thing was kind of a low point. And like, looking back, it was just kind of a swamp of just always feeling crappy. Like, there'd be points where I'd be like, oh crap, I want to kill myself type of deal. But like, it was just kind of most of the time. And especially thinking back to where, like, I don't know, I lost a lot of concept of time. Like, every day was just sort of the same. I don't know. My low point was just kind of like, especially the last like year or something, where like every day was just kind of like a sludge to get through. And I don't know, that's like, you know, it's frustrating just because you don't see much change the whole time, you know? So that kind of was how it manifested for me, I think.
What made you decide to write about this publicly?
I've like, ever since like my GitHub days, I've written about a lot of things. Like, I'm not a good writer about like stuff. Like, I'm an okay writer about like things that I've gone through and experienced and stuff. And, you know, I've written about different things in the past, like, you know, getting fired, for example, was a big one. And, you know, at the end of the day, like, it's, you know, if you can share your experiences and it helps somebody, I mean, that sounds so lame, but like, it's
redemption in that.
Yeah. Like, you, and I mean, it's not entirely selfless. Like, as you write this sort of stuff, you know, it really helps yourself out. Like, I tell people, like, you don't have to publish the post, just like write it down, or, you know, write an email to somebody, just never send it type of deal. I think all of that sort of helps you process it. You know, a lot of this stuff was sort of parallels when I got fired, and I did this long post about getting fired and stuff. And then I gave a talk three times afterwards, kind of modeled on that post. And the first time I gave the talk, it was like really raw and, you know, oh, how do I talk about this? The second time was just kind of like, oh, this is interesting. And the third time I was like, I never want to give this talk again because like I'm over
it. I'm bored of this. I don't care about
it. Yeah, I'm over it and like whatever the case is. And I think that's kind of an interesting aspect of it as well. And both with like when I did the fire talk first, I got like a bunch of emails saying, I think the count is up to like 24 now where people said, oh, I thought that was a good post. And then a couple months later, I got fired and then I thought it was a great post or something. And it's like it's helpful to get that type of response. And I got a lot of emails from the post on depression from people saying the same sort of thing. And especially with depression, you know, mental illness, anything like that, just the more people talking about it, the better. And at the end of the day, like, this is one of the most, I don't know, formative experiences of my life. And I don't know, I just like to sort of talk about that when it's appropriate. And, you know, the whole time I was kind of going through this, it's been like a year or so where I've been having some sort of outline about like the posts and stuff like that. But I just, you know, until you get to the point when you're really ready to write about it and discuss it and stuff, it's just hard for me to do. So finally got to that point, or at least found enough time to write it. And I don't know, I'm happy I wrote it. Yeah. Even in the post, I kind of mentioned like, you know, kind of hover over the mouse for like the button for a couple minutes of like, do I really want to talk about this? I sent it to a couple people in the industry who kind of deal with depression and mental health, and they were just like, no, you should publish this and stuff. So it's always helpful to have, you know, some jerk friend next to you just saying, yeah, do it. It's good. Like, here's some confidence if you don't have it. So,
yeah, I think that the power of being public about this kind of conversation is that feedback loop of like, you're not alone in this, both for you, but the way that that serves other people to hear your voice articulate so clearly, like how hard it can feel. And I think we all need to hear over and over that we're not alone in our struggles.
I was going to say, like, honestly, one of the bigger parts is just like, I'm very indebted to a number of people who helped me out when I was going through like the really hard stuff. And like, it just makes me feel glad that I can use my experience to like help somebody else out. Like, somebody else helped me quite a bit. I don't know. It's the whole pay it forward. Like, you know, never be able to cover what they did for me, but yeah, I can hopefully help out with somebody. So,
how did people help you? What was helpful to you in the midst of that season?
It's super interesting to see who helps you, because there's some people who are very like, you know, your best friend or something may not be the best person to help you out in stuff like this, versus the person who you don't really know very well. Might end up being like your biggest support system or the biggest person. And it really comes down to, have they done it before? Have they had experience with themselves or somebody else? That level of sort of empathy is, you know, different with different people. And, you know, it comes in a lot of different ways. Like, it's whether it's a matter of like, you know, just being somebody to rant to, or, you know, send a bunch of text messages of like, everything's terrible, and having somebody listen to you and stuff. Or I know a lot of people who've helped out their friends by just saying, okay, you should probably see a therapist. I'm going to go through all the crap of, you know, somebody nearby you. Is it good with your insurance? Is like all of the logistical stuff is another good way to help. I don't know. It's just a lot of just being a good friend, being somebody who can, you know, recognize how they can help you, or recognize that like, hey, I don't have any experience with this. Like, you should really be talking to somebody else, or, you know, whatever the case is. There's a lot of ways to sort of help out from that position.
I think sometimes it's the showing up that's helpful. Mm-hmm. You know, I've certainly talked with people who have no idea what to say when someone is not doing well, or when someone's in a bad place. But there's help in just sort of showing up and making popcorn and sitting on the couch next to somebody. If the couch is their spot, you just sit there. You don't have to talk. You don't have to fix it. You don't have to problem solve, but there's something so important about just like another human being present.
Yeah. Especially, I think there's a segment of like forgiveness that is kind of, you know, 'cause I was a jerk to a lot of people, like maybe not even like straight up, but just kind of like being you know, nobody really wants to hang with like a Debbie Downer all the time, or, you know, I'd say things I didn't mean or whatever. And, you know, the fact that these people kind of kept coming back and still saying, no, you know, it's just everybody feels down or whatever. Or that's just a thing. Like, it's helpful to at least see people there who are ready to ride with you if, you know, things come to it or something like that. So
they'll put up with your like cynical, pessimistic,
yeah,
depression self. So, you know, for some people, and certainly not everybody, but for some people, depression is recurrent. It happens over and over. And it sounds like there have probably been other times in your life that you've been depressed. But as you, I guess from here, in this place where you're relatively healthy, not depressed right now, as you think about if you were to experience another episode of depression, like, how would you equip yourself? Or, you know, what would you want to have in place or ready to help support you should that happen?
Yeah, it's something that, like, you know, you're always kind of worried about. I made a comment to one of my friends recently. We were kind of talking all about this sort of stuff. And, like, I kind of understand the, I don't know, ever-present fear. Fear is not the right word, but, like, worrying about this sort of stuff for, like, recovering alcoholics. Like, I was, you know, obviously, I knew it was a thing to, like, relapse and stuff like that. But I was like, all right, it's been 30 years since, you know, your last drink or something. But I don't know, I can kind of feel that now, recognize it a lot more in myself with like depression, even though I feel monumentally better than I used to. There's always that kind of fear of like, oh, things could go wrong. And then, you know, I'm right back to where I was. So I think like therapy really helped me in at least giving me more tools to sort of analyze, to at least like, number one, to recognize when I am in that hole again. Because a lot of the times, at least in my experience, I find myself in that hole and I didn't really know how I got there. And it's been like, oh, wow, it's been 6 months. Like, how did I not notice this? Like, how did I get in this, you know, situation? So I think that's like one thing, is to sort of keep asking yourself, like, how do I feel? Like, is this, you know, different from yesterday? Am I too many days feeling the same way? And, you know, I feel a little bit more cognizant towards that. The other thing is just always have, you know, the support system kind of ready. Like, I ended up, you know, I had too many weeks in a row where I just went in to see my therapist and we were just kind of like, well, everything's fine. All right, see you next week. So I don't ended up not seeing my therapist anymore. Just kind of stopped with that. But like, he was very much like, yeah, anytime you want to come back, even if it's sort of an irregular checkup or something, you know, obviously, you know, he's there for me and stuff like that. So, you know, kind of having, you know, the ability of recognizing when something is different, when something's not going as well, and then at least having, you know, steps to fix that. Or, you know, it's kind of the same with any sort of problem, but depression is just, can somehow sneak up on you, you know, unless you're kind of, you know, paranoid and aware about it and stuff.
Yeah, well, most of us aren't really used to being that self-reflective. I mean, we're not, mm-hmm. not monks who sort of spend all our time meditating. Like, most of us are out in the world, we're busy and we're doing stuff. And until like mm-hmm. the wheels fall off the bus, like, we're just going to keep going. Yeah. That reflective capacity, or the skill, the ability to be able to like really monitor how you're feeling on a given day. And it sounds like writing has also been a part of that for you, whether that's journaling every couple of days or.
Yeah, not as much recently, but I need to start doing that again.
Well, it's a great way to sort of track the mood, right? To mm-hmm. pay attention to what's going on inside. When you put it down on paper, it becomes a little bit separate, a little, you can see it a little more objectively.
Yeah. And it's like more of a record too, because I mean, at least I had the problem where I would forget, or you'd sort of like, oh, it wasn't that bad 2 weeks ago or something. When really, like, if you had a record of like, oh yeah, I've been feeling pretty bad for 2 or 3 weeks, like I should start changing something. And I think like, it's very easy, like, as you're saying, like, we're all doing stuff. It's very easy to sort of say, oh, I had a really crappy day, but it's like 10 PM, I'm going to sleep. And then you keep doing the cycle. So if you kind of look at it just as a day by day thing, it's very easy to sort of say, oh, well, I'm just going to sleep, I'll fix it tomorrow or something. But you kind of have to step back and like look on also on the realm of like weeks or months and say like, okay, what is the overall macro view of my life and how I'm feeling? But I don't know. We'll see. It's something that I'm still sort of worried about, and you know, I don't feel out of the woods yet. So yeah, we'll see.
It's something that, you know, no one hopes happens again, but is like, I think it's part of like telling the truth about what's hard and telling the truth about what's happened. And the fact that your body did this under stress means that at least there's the capacity to go that direction again, and you want to catch it early. I think that's another thing about working with really high functioning people is that, you know, they can function under like really difficult emotional or internal circumstances, and they just keep going and keep going to work and keep like, frankly, like producing reasonably. And so the external environment doesn't necessarily say like, dude, you're not okay. And so it has to be a little bit more of the internal observation to try to catch something early.
Yeah. Especially it's like, it's very much the same in tech where you have to pay attention to what you're monitoring, like what metrics you're looking at. And if like your metric is like, am I being productive? And like, that's your only metric. There's plenty of times where I've been super productive, but feeling terrible. So you kind of have to like change your metrics sometimes and sort of start reorienting like, okay, productivity is one metric. What are other metrics? Like, am I seeing enough people? Am I going out with friends? Am I, you know, exercise? Like, there's a bunch of other metrics. And unless you're like analyzing those too, it's very easy to sort of just say, oh, well, you know, I do the work, so, you know, whatever. I'm fine. Like, yeah.
All things considered, are there parts of depression that you're thankful for, or not that you would choose it necessarily, but like, there been any silver linings for you?
I mean, I hate depression.
I think that's a fair answer. Like, no, yeah. I hate it. I never want to experience it.
I don't know. Like at the end of the day, like I view myself, even, you know, myself like 3 or 4 years ago, I'm very proud that I am a very different person, or at least like I'm happy that I've recognized the difference between me and like 3 or 4 years ago. So I think there's like some silver lining in terms of, I don't know, I think I treat things differently, or I would hope that I'm more empathetic about a lot of these problems, a lot of how your actions, especially as like a founder, you know, impact other people. And at the end of the day, it's just like having that type of, you know, life experience, even though it sucks, like it gives you something, I don't know, some differentiation from other people that you can lean on, and hopefully it, you know, changes a lot of your, you know, how you interact with people in a day-to-day basis, especially in like a work basis or even as like a personal basis and stuff. Like, how can I be a better, you know, partner? And yeah, it's just like, it's a long journey, but I feel different at the end of the journey or in the middle of the journey, wherever I am in the journey, I just feel different. So I think that's a positive thing.
Yeah. These things that deepen you and mature you that you wouldn't choose, but so what's next for you?
Just working, just trying to build a company, I guess. So it can't be that hard, right?
No, I hear that's like 100% awesome all the time.
Yeah. No, mostly just been doing that. I've been traveling a lot the last couple of weeks. So I'm kind of happy to just be at home and, you know, hopefully get to a beta and then I can launch the thing. Because right now everything feels very imaginary because it's just me and like 7 other users on the site. But yeah, it's just kind of, you know, got to get to that next step and then, you know, we'll see what happens at that point.
You and your ideas.
Too many ideas, not enough building. Got to get back to work. But
well, it does, I think, speak to the point of like how important it is to have your mind be a place that is as well as possible. Mm-hmm. Right? All of your work is dependent on your ability to be creative and to execute and have motivation and communicate and all of these things that are like higher order cognitive tasks that don't work so well when you're stuck. Don't work so well.
Yeah. We all have way, way more problems than we need right now in our own lives. And it's like the last thing we want to have to deal with is like, you know, your brain making everything else way harder than they need to be too. So.
Right. The self-sabotage that happens in your mind.
Yep.
Cool. Well, do you feel complete? Anything else you want to make sure we talk about or mention? Any other wisdom you want to throw down?
I don't know. Just, you know, see somebody if you think that you or somebody else is, you know, could benefit from it. And like, I kind of agree with everybody else who says like, you know, even if you don't feel too terrible, or even if you feel fine, like it's totally worthwhile to see somebody at least a couple of times in your life. Cause I think it does sort of reorient yourself and, you know, give you the tools to sort of prove yourself. So
if I had a magic wand, I think I would like enforce that every founder have a therapist.
I think every person should have a therapist, really.
Every human, but especially founders. Yeah. And, you know, like you say, you don't have to see them three times a week for the next 15 years.
But yeah.
Having that expert in your Rolodex, so to speak, who is available when you need them, is really an important tool.
Yeah, it just gives you a better foundation, raises your kind of level, and then you can do better other things and stuff. So
yeah. And there are lots of mental health professionals that are pretty awesome human beings and interesting to sit with.
And there's just a lot of other ways to sort of reorient this part of yourself too. Like, it doesn't have to be therapy if you're, for whatever reason, it doesn't work for you, or it's just not like what you're looking for. Like, there's a lot of different ways. And I don't know, I just like ignored so many different things for so long before it was too late. So
yeah. But good news is it's not too late.
Never too late.
That you're on the other side of it, even though it felt like for a time that you would never be.
Yeah, I would have been shocked if somebody said that, like, or if future me, present me went back to past me. Like, past me would have been like, how? Yeah, like, this is ridiculous. But yeah, it's I think it's doable.
Emotions aren't permanent. I think they certainly feel like it when you're in depression, but.
Yeah, everything is more extreme in depression too. Even like, sometimes it's like the highs are even better too. And it's like, I don't know. I had good highs and then they'd just sink right away. And I don't know. It's just a weird, murky, everything is weird part of your brain. So.
But the good news is that people get better.
Yeah, people get better. Life is still good.
Yeah, I'm glad you got better.
Me too. Yeah. It's so exhausting not being better.
Depression is exhausting.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for taking the time to talk to me. And as we began, thanks for your post and the courage to put it out there. I think in such an authentic, just true to your own voice way is so important in terms of letting other people know that this is part of life and you're not alone and that there's definitely hope, like no matter how desperate it feels, there's another side. So it's a good message that you've put out there in the world.
Well, thanks for having me. I mean, I definitely agree that like just more people talking about this stuff, the better. You know, like, you're not weird to feel this way. Like, you're probably more normal than the people who don't feel this way. So
thanks for listening to this episode of Zen Founder. Our theme song is A New Beginning by bensound.com, used under Creative Commons.